supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight.
I want to thank you all for being here. This is a beautiful, big celebration. Actually, to be honest, it's even bigger than we had anticipated. So I want to thank you very much, and God bless America. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
President Donald Trump speaking at this afternoon's impromptu A Celebration of America event at the White House. Let's consider the nexus of politics and professional pigskin with Philadelphia Inquirer national political writer Jonathan Tamari. Jonathan, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Sure thing. Thank you for having me.
And you were there. Set the scene.
Well, this came after a full day of a real aggressive messaging, honestly, from the White House. It began with a tweet this morning from the president, a lengthy statement from his press office. His press secretary, Sarah Sanders, spoke at length about the Eagles and their decision, or the decision to cancel the event today, from the podium at the White House press briefing. And then we all went out back immediately after that. The president was there with the Marine Band, the Army Chorus. They're in full, elaborate dress uniforms, and with a pretty friendly Trump crowd out there on the White House lawn. Some Eagles fans, some people, honestly, who did not seem to have any connection to Philadelphia or the team when we asked them. And the president gave a very brief speech, heavy on patriotism. They played patriotic songs, God Bless America, the national anthem, America the Beautiful, just kind of get the point across that they were trying to emphasize patriotism and frame this as a fight of patriotism, and not as opposed to what the players are trying to say, which is saying that this is an argument about raising awareness of social injustice.
We already know there will be no element of surprise whether Cleveland or Golden State prevails in the NBA. Both teams have already said they will not be going to the White House. What have you heard from the football base on social media today?
It's pretty divided, and that's what's kind of the most remarkable thing for me today, is that I lived in Philadelphia for a time and covered the Eagles for a couple of seasons. And so from my experience, there's very little that would bring the city together and unite the city the way the Eagles did on every Sunday, and certainly the way a championship did after all these years of waiting for fans there. And remember seeing the scenes of the parade after they won. And so this is something that usually brings people together. But on my social media feed, at least today, there was a sharp divide among Eagles fans who support the president and Eagles fans who are critical of the president. And you really saw this divide creeping into an area that I think usually brings people together, and an area that most people usually go to when they want to forget about politics and the rest of the real world.
Initially, that divide was set over standing for the national anthem. In the interim, the NFL came up with a compromise, and apparently that is not sufficient for the president as well. What is his ultimate want, his ultimate ask in this?
Well, I think in some ways he was happy with that NFL policy because he sees it as a win. The owners are effectively saying that the default is that you need to be out there standing, and if not, you have to stay in the locker room. I think Trump is not maybe happy that there's even an option of players staying in the locker room, not participating in the anthem in that way, but it at the very least makes them much less visible, makes their protests much less visible. I think he got much of what he wanted, and I think the players actually have some of the strongest objections to what the NFL is doing and feeling like the league is cutting off their platform to raise issues that are important to them.
Those sentiments were certainly echoed throughout the day by Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney in strong support of the team, and Pennsylvania U.S. Senator Casey offered to feat the team at Harrisburg today. Among those in attendance, were there any noticeable by their omission in the political arena from Pennsylvania?
Well, very few actually attended. The only two people who were there, as far as that the president cited, were Congressman Mike Kelly and Lou Barletta. Neither of them are from the Philadelphia area. Kelly is actually from pretty far western Pennsylvania. Barletta is from Hazleton in more northern and central Pennsylvania, and he's running for U.S. Senate. They were the only two Republicans there. Another Republican from Chester County, Congressman Ryan Costello, who is retiring, tweeted about how disappointed he was He's a big Eagles fan. He felt that the president handled it poorly, and he was disappointed, according to his tweet, that it had become such a divisive moment.
Here's your chance to give us the scoop. When the Eagles prevail as Super Bowl champions again next year, do you know if they'll get an invitation?
That's a really good question. I imagine that there would be some invitation, although maybe we're seeing, you know, maybe we are seeing the end of this tradition, especially, you know, as we spoke about earlier, the NBA finalists have both said they don't want to attend the White House. So I guess there's a chance that we might see this tradition fade. I think it will largely depend on how this all plays out over the next season.
Well, then thank you for helping us wend our way this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
Philadelphia Inquirer national political writer Jonathan Tomari. A memorial park now sits on the sliver of Center City, Philadelphia, where 6 people were killed, 13 more injured in a deadly building collapse 5 years ago. As WHYY's Aaron Mozell reports, today's dedication ceremony at 22nd and Market Streets took place one day after another row home in North Philadelphia collapsed, killing a contractor.
Nikki Harmon wept as the centerpiece of the small park was unveiled, an 8-foot sculpture inscribed with the names of the people killed in the collapse, including her aunt, Juanita Harmon.
You know, she was retired and enjoying life, going on cruises, going to plays, and that's what she should have continued doing and not have it ended like this.
Harmon says she's glad the land was transformed into something beautiful, but it doesn't ease her pain.
Our loss already happened. I feel like this means they're taking it seriously.
Former city treasurer Nancy Winkler lost her daughter Anne Bryan in the collapse. The art student was shopping with a friend at the Salvation Army thrift store when a freestanding brick wall of a building being demolished next door pancaked onto the store and crushed it. Winkler says she hopes the $3 million park serves as a reminder of what happened 5 years ago so that it never happens again.
A new line was crossed on June 5th, 2013. The city was shocked by the level of greed and indifference to human life and safety that was demonstrated by so many people who were aware of the dangerous demolition but did nothing.
Police charged 2 men tasked with demolishing the commercial property that flattened the thrift store, the project's general contractor and an excavator operator. Both of them are in jail. At trial, prosecutors argued the deadly collapse could have been avoided if the building had been demolished by hand, not by heavy machinery. Some were critical that prosecutors never went after the owner of the building or others involved in the demolition. But in civil court, the Salvation Army, the building's owner, and his right-hand man were found liable. They had to pay the victims and their families a combined $227 million. Aaron Mozell, WHYY News.
Now that lawmakers have returned to Washington after their Memorial Day recess, one item at the top of their list is the Farm Bill. It includes new work requirements to a program intended to provide food to low-income families. WHYY Washington correspondent Matt Laszlo has the story on how it's splitting lawmakers from our region, but not always following party lines.
Pennsylvania Republican Congressman Glenn Thompson currently represents a sprawling district that stretches from Lake Erie almost to Harrisburg. He chairs the Nutrition Subcommittee that took the lead in adding new work requirements to this year's Farm Bill. He's proud of the changes they made to what used to be food stamps, but is now called SNAP. Thompson says they made sure to exempt single parents with kids too young for school from new work requirements.
But for everyone else, we want them to have better access to skills-based education. And this doesn't create new bureaucracies. This actually builds on what we already do under 2 existing laws.
The GOP proposal is estimated to save some $20 billion from the SNAP program, in part by requiring able-bodied adults to do job training programs for a minimum of 20 hours a week in order to keep getting SNAP. Thompson calls it a no-brainer.
Quite frankly, for those individuals who are work-capable adults, 18 to 59, who are not disabled, and also don't have children in the household that are not in school yet, we give them better access to more effective skills-based education. And so what's not to like? I don't know why the other side is politicizing what we're doing.
But 2 Democrats from our region are also on the Agriculture Committee. They're raising a fit over the proposed changes to SNAP. Delaware Congresswoman Lisa Blunt Rochester estimates that the proposed changes would mean more than 1 million people nationwide will be moved off the program in a decade. She calls that unacceptable.
There's a missed opportunity because we all believe in work and that work is important. But what they want to do is create a massive new work program that is untested and underfunded.
There are currently 10 pilot programs focused on job training for low-income families who use SNAP. One is in Delaware. That's why Rochester is wondering why the GOP is barreling ahead with changes to the program without the results from the pilots.
It is focused on really providing the supports and the training to help people on food stamps to go to work. And again, what we're hearing, the pilots aren't finished until 2019. So my question to the committee was, why are we putting the cart before the horse? Why don't we find out what the research shows, what's best practice, and then make those kind of changes?
Rochester says what's more concerning is that the GOP is proposing new stiff penalties that could leave low-income families without food. Under the GOP plan, people who don't meet certain requirements could lose the benefit for 12 months, and the second infraction leaves them ineligible for 3 years. Rochester says that's unfair.
This is food on the table. These are children. The majority of people on SNAP are seniors, people with disabilities, and children. And so just the impact of it, I think we need to go back to the drawing board and do something that really benefits all Americans.
The Farm Bill is sweeping legislation that includes many subsidies and crop supports for the nation's farmers. So the committee in charge of it has always been filled with farm state lawmakers. But the committee also includes many urban lawmakers who use the Farm Bill to feed their low-income constituents. That's why Philadelphia Democrat Dwight Evans says he's so disappointed Democrats didn't get any input in this year's bill.
This is, my understanding, not what the Farm Bill was supposed to be about. Food is not Democrat or Republican. And it's not poor, rich. I mean, I don't know how they can think that this is going to go anywhere. I don't think this is good, sound sense. I always thought the Agriculture Committee was about bringing people together. And they just, to me, are just going in the wrong direction.
This year, the Farm Bill is House Resolution, or H.R. 2. And the massive tax overhaul was H.R. 1. Evan says that's not an accident.
So this is really to pay for the tax package. You know, Social Security, Medicaid. And with the SNAP program, all to pay for the taxes that they voted through House Resolution 1. So really, this is a back doorway, matter of fact, a front doorway, that they want to pay for the tax scam that they have.
GOP members in our region are split on the proposal. South Jersey Republican Tom MacArthur supports it.
I think that's fair to the taxpayer to make sure that working-age, fully-abled people are either looking for work or getting employed or getting educated. We want to help needy people. We don't want to enable people that are in a different category.
But New Jersey Republican Leonard Lance says he thinks GOP leaders are making a mistake. He says he doesn't think voters put Republicans in charge of Washington in order to overhaul the nation's safety net programs.
I think the election last time hinged on a variety of issues. I'm not sure that was at the top of the list.
Far-right conservatives helped tank the Farm Bill a couple weeks ago because they're demanding a separate vote on immigration. Now GOP leaders have promised them that vote. So after that, the GOP is expected to take up the Farm Bill again, and they aren't making changes to win over Democrats. That means they'll need to convince more moderate Republicans to support the bill. Lawmakers in our region could be key to getting it over the finish line, or tanking it altogether. For WHYY News, Matt Laszlo in Washington.
This afternoon, Delaware became the first state beside Nevada to offer full sports betting. WHYY's Zoe Reed has more from the Dover Downs Hotel and Casino.
I want to place a $10 bet on the Philadelphia Fightin' Phils to beat the Chicago Cubs in Chicago tonight.
Delaware Governor John Carney made the first official wager at the Dover Casino.
Tourism is a big thing in our state. Particularly as we move into the summer season in the beach areas, we have hundreds of thousands of visitors that come from all over the region. People from those states in the Northeast region come to retire here. Today, we're going to be first in offering them an entertainment opportunity so that they can support their sports teams, hopefully those Philadelphia teams that I mentioned a minute ago, by making a legal wager.
Last month, the U.S. Supreme Court cleared the way for full-scale sports betting nationwide. Because of a failed attempt at allowing wagers on NFL games in the 1970s, Delaware was grandfathered in when a 1992 federal law banned commercial sports betting. In 2009, the state started offering parlay bets on NFL games. But you couldn't wager on a single game. It had to include at least three. Since then, Delaware leaders have prepared for the possibility of expanding sports betting to single-game bets on sports other than professional football. It means a lot to gamblers like John Thorner of Dover, who bets around $1,000 a week on football, mostly over the internet.
It means everything. I don't have to travel 3,000 miles to Vegas anymore. Everything is right down in my backyard.
Stephen Borkowitz of Washington, D.C. bets about four times a week, wagering between $100 and a couple thousand dollars. Now he says he will play at the casino in Dover frequently.
It's great because online it tends to be hard to get paid your, you know, the money. Some places will not pay you, or they'll slow pay you. It'll take a long time to get your money back. Here, if I make a winning wager, I'd come in and cash my ticket and get my money right away.
New Jersey is rapidly taking steps to add sports betting. Dover Downs president and CEO Ed Suter says there will be a steady stream of bettors in Delaware until then.
Soon they're going to be all around us. So this period now where we're the only ones, it's going to only last for a short amount of time, but we'll take it.
Sports betting is not expected to be as big of a revenue stream as casino games. Dover Downs has hired five tellers compared to 500 it added when table games debuted. From the Delaware desk, Zoe Reed, WHYY News.
With Delaware launching full-scale sports betting today and Pennsylvania and New Jersey looking to join the fray as soon as possible, let's place our bet with Jennifer Roberts, Associate Director of the University of Nevada Las Vegas Center for Gaming Regulation. Jennifer, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Jennifer, Delaware's three casinos are now offering single-game wagering on professional baseball, basketball, football, hockey, soccer, golf, and auto racing, though there are many ways to go about this. Is it beyond dispute that every state will join the fray and legalize sports gaming?
I don't expect that every state will legalize and regulate sports wagering. I do expect about 20 to 30 states to seriously look at it and launch it within, 3 to 5 years.
What are the decision points for states?
It's whether they have the legal and regulatory capacity, whether they have the interest to take that product on. Some states are limited to lottery only. Some states have casinos. And so it's making decisions on whether it would benefit the state through revenues, job creation, as well as other types of benefits for the state and combating the illegal market.
Is the proliferation of lotteries over the decades a good template for what might likely roll out with sports wagering?
Well, some states are looking at lotteries. Delaware already had limited sports wagering on NFL games through their lottery. But, for example, Nevada offers their full-scale sports wagering through their regulated casinos. So it's going to be a decision on whether to offer it through the casinos, through racetracks, through the lottery. That's something that the states will have to decide.
Given the typical low margin for the house, if the states impose too many fees and restrictions and costs, could that then push the market back to illegal wagering?
And illegal wagering will not disappear. It's something that will be combated through enforcement efforts, through low tax rates, through low or non-existent integrity fees. So there are measures that can be taken to combat the illegal market, and there's also added consumer protections. You're guaranteed payouts. You have clear-cut rules. You have patron dispute processes.
Will this, beyond dispute, bolster overall wagering on sports events?
Well, it will certainly enhance regulated sports wagering. We're going to see the federal government benefit. They currently have a 0.25% tax on handle, which is the amount wagered, and with more states adding that in, they will actually have some added benefit as well.
Looking down the road, do you think there's much appetite for expanding sports wagering beyond games, for perhaps adding wagering for drafts or esports?
Well, you see it in Nevada right now. We have what they call other event wagering, And as long as it's approved by the regulators, they just approved, for example, wagers on a Golden Tee tournament, which is in a kind of video game. They have approved esports tournaments, NBA draft, NFL draft, MVP awards, and those are increasing. So I think you'll see those types of offerings. It's something also in the UK. The UK allows for wagering on when will alien life be found and all sorts of strange wagers. But I think it'll be a mixture of, you know, other event wagering as well as maybe not so far as what the UK allows.
Putting alien life to the side for the moment, are we past the point where this could impact perceptions about the integrity of the games?
There has to be integrity in the games to have people watch them. If people don't feel like it's fair and there's rule violations, and then they're not going to watch the sports. And the expansion of regulated sports wagering can help with integrity, and watching betting lines and betting offerings can help monitor integrity in games. But the integrity already exists, and that's done through league rules and league prohibitions on certain wagering. So it already has to exist for the market to be there just to enjoy the sport.
Thanks for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Jennifer Roberts, Associate Director of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas Center for Gaming Regulation. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on your favorite podcast app or listen back at whyy.org/news. Today is primary day in 8 states, including New Jersey. Stay with WHYY this evening as we offer updates when the polls close at 8, and we'll join NPR at 9 this evening for special coverage of all the races. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller, Newsworks Tonight.